Firehouse.com. Real issues, real answers, real firefighters. Firehouse.com brings you the leaders of the nation's fire, rescue, and EMS services, the top columnists and educators, and today's most important issues, headlines, and comments. Listen right on your desktop or download and listen on the go to Firehouse.com.
Welcome to the Leader's Toolbox on Firehouse.com. I'm your host, Rich Gassaway. We're at the Firehouse World Expo in San Diego, California. Beautiful weather and wonderful conference. And I had an opportunity to run into a friend of mine, Steve Przybrowski. And Steve is giving a couple of presentations here at Firehouse World. And we're going to talk today about one of the topics that Steve speaks frequently on, and that is how to prepare yourself for promotional exams. And specifically, we're going to talk about the emergency simulations. But before I do that, let me tell you a little bit about Steve's background. He's been in the fire service for 18 years, and he's currently a battalion chief with the Santa Clara County Fire Department in Northern California. Steve's a contributing editor at Firehouse.com and was named a 2008 California Fire Service Instructor of the Year. He's also a instructor for the Chabot College Fire Technology Program in Hayward, California, and also the former president of the Northern California Fire Training Officers Association. Additionally, Steve is the president and founder of Code 3 Fire Training and Education, where he teaches classes across the country in areas such as officer development, leadership, command and control, and promotional preparation. Steve is finishing his last year of the Executive Fire Officer Program at the National Fire Academy and has a master's degree in Emergency Services Administration. Steve, welcome to the Leader's Toolbox. And this is a very exciting topic because I get a lot of questions asked of me that I'm sure that in the course of this program is going to get answered, and you're going to do it a lot better than I could.
Well, Rich, thank you very much for having me aboard today. I'm looking forward to this. First of all, it's been a great time at the conference so far, and looking forward to the next couple of days. So thank you for having me here.
Good. Well, you're doing a couple of programs. You're doing one on the responsibilities of the first new company officer, and then the one that kind of got my attention that I thought would make for a good podcast is how to excel at promotional exams, and specifically the emergency simulation. Steve, why is emergency simulations one of the most popular events within a fire service promotional exam process?
Well, typically, especially since most departments are still called fire departments, fire is our primary goal, even though we also participate in rescue events, emergency medical service calls. But the emergency simulation seems to be the most common event because that is what is going to be probably one of the most challenging things for a company officer or chief officer to have to do, is to manage the emergency scene. So while a lot of departments will have an oral interview, possibly a written examination as well, the emergency simulation is one way to put someone in the hot seat in a simulated scenario and really test their skills to see how they would do under simulated conditions, because unfortunately, we can't really create events for them to test their skills, and we can't really wait until they actually have the real events so we can do an okay job for the most part. It's not real life. It's not the same thing, but by putting an emergency simulation together, it can simulate real events and hopefully put someone in the hot seat and sort of get an idea of what they may do when the real thing does happen.
What can a candidate expect that they're going to face when they do if there is such a thing as a typical emergency simulation, but we'll run with that term. What could they expect in a typical emergency simulation?
Well, I've seen, for the most part, two different types of simulations that occur: dynamic versus static simulation. Static simulation is where the candidate walks in the room and sees a picture that is on the wall and usually has two to three raters that are evaluating him or her. Well, the picture on the wall usually doesn't change. It's usually a picture of a building on fire. It may progress a little bit, but you see the same picture for about 5 to 10 to 15 minutes, and you're expected to talk the incident out. It's not an interactive play. Versus a dynamic simulation is actually where a candidate walks in a room and will see typically an escalating event where they start out with one room on fire, and then obviously if they don't do a good job, it progresses to another room, the entire floor, the entire building, and there's usually multiple role players that are also assisting via the radio. So as the first and captain, you may be the first and captain going in. You assign truck one as the ventilation group. You would have a captain or simulated captain playing the role of the ventilation group as truck one. And then you may have another role player playing the role of an engine company captain that you assign doing something else. So it's very interactive. There is no right or wrong way. Dynamic is a little bit more challenging to put together because you have a script and it can really get deviated depending on the role players and how things go, whereas the static simulation is very easy in a sense because it's just a picture, you talk it out. So those are the two primary simulations, dynamic and static simulations. And really it's going to be one or two or three events that usually occur over a course of maybe 30 to 60 minutes. Depending on what you have in your jurisdiction, whatever your hazards are, you usually see something related to that. If you have a lot of wildland, especially in California where I'm from, we throw a lot of the wildland fire problems on people because they're more common incidents. So it could be any type of event, and usually for 30 to 60 minutes, could be multiple different scenarios, and really just to test your ability to be able to manage an incident. And especially as a captain, you're not on scene with the battalion chief right away, so can you manage an incident for 5 to 10 minutes till the battalion chief arrives? Or if you're a battalion chief, you go into it, can you pick up the pieces from the first in captain that may or may not have done a great job of setting the stage for the entire incident?
Steve, are these the kind of, in the business that you run, as part of what you do, mm-hmm. come in and create scenarios for a department that say they want to do a simulation, but they're not really sure exactly how to put it together as far as the components go and things. Is this something you do for them?
Well, I haven't done that specifically. Typically, my training and expertise in enjoyment and passion is actually assisting candidates with getting promoted. Now, there are a lot of people out there like myself that will approach and work with cities because the city or the county, whoever the fire department is, has a choice. They can either create their own simulations in-house or they can contract with another company to do it. Some departments can't afford to contract. They do it themselves. Some choose to contract out because they don't want the liability and they prefer another company to do that. While it is a possibility, I haven't gotten down that road yet just because of time and energy, and I've been focusing on actually preparing candidates. Okay. But it's actually not that difficult in the grand scheme of things because the bottom line is you're taking a bunch of pictures, creating some events, and then creating scripts that best match the department that you're working with.
Well, I think that's an important point that I don't want to let slip by mm-hmm. in the podcast here is that Steve's contribution is helping candidates prepare. So if you're a candidate out there that is aligning for promotion and you're going to have a simulation, then Steve is in the business of helping you to prepare for that simulation and for the entire promotional process, really. Steve, what are some of the common reasons that firefighters maybe wouldn't do so well in a simulation?
Well, trying to look at the most common things that I've experienced over the years as being a raider and being a candidate and just through my experience and exposure, one of the biggest reasons people don't do well at immersion simulation is they really don't prepare. They think they can go in and just wing it when it doesn't really work that way because there's a lot of challenges that we're going to be throwing at you, and if you haven't properly done your homework, your research, your preparation of what you're getting into, more specifically, they didn't prepare for the position. So a lot of people focus on preparing for the test and not the position, whereas if you prepare for the test, you may miss some things because if you prepare for the position, you've got a better chance of handling whatever is thrown at you. For example, in one of our battalion chief examinations, the battalion chief that was actually putting together the simulation was known for his wildland skills, so everybody that was taking the test goes, oh, Chief so-and-so is putting it together. I'm going to only study these types of skills because that's what he always does. Well, he got smart. He changed it, and he put a hazmat incident in there, and that threw a lot of people for a loop, whereas if you prepare to be a battalion chief, for example, it shouldn't matter what is thrown at you, hazmat, high-rise, commercial structure. So I really think number one is not preparing for the position itself because then everything else should be easy. I think some other problems that people run into where they're not successful is they focus too much on being a check-the-box incident commander. I mean, we see tactical worksheets that are out there which are great to use if that helps you manage an incident, but there's always the risk of a follow-up question. Like, for example, I was working with one candidate that goes, okay, I'm going to assign the truck to be ventilation, and it was a five-story high-rise. Actually, not a high-rise for five stories, but it was a five-story apartment complex. Well, the next question I asked him was, well, how are you going to ventilate? He goes, that's not my job. I'm just assigning it as the incident commander. Well, it's common that some departments say, well, now you're the captain that's been assigned ventilation. Please tell us what tools you would bring, what direction you would give to your crew, where you would ventilate. He was so focused on checking the box, he never thought of actually the whole process, which is very common. So if you understand what you're doing, you're not just checking the box, because part of it is your thought process you're going to evaluate it on. Some other reasons I think are really common, lack of building construction knowledge, lack of fire behavior knowledge, lack of strategy and tactics knowledge, you know, not understanding department culture, department rules and regulations, common accepted industry practices, because you're going to have raiders that are probably not going to be from your department. They're going to be probably from neighboring jurisdictions or in some places even out of the state. People that our raiders are usually up on industry standards, even if your department is not maybe up to date with using incident command system, realize these raiders are. So the challenge is you want to be able to demonstrate that you can hit the ground running, which can be challenging. Some other challenges that candidates run into is they don't manage their time because there's a specific amount of time that you're going to get cut off at, lack of command presence, they can't make a decision. A lot of problems I see, especially with captains that are going for battalion chief or higher, is they can't think big picture. They think good at just one company operation, but as a battalion chief, you're managing multiple companies, so you got to think more big picture. Not where the fire's at right now, but where the fire's going to be at 5 minutes from now, 10 minutes from now, and so forth. So planning ahead, I think, is really critical. So bottom line is that you can't just plan on hitting the ground running. You've got to be a safe beginner that can hit the ground running. A lot of people want to be safe beginners, but there's not much room for error. So the trick is you got to be a safe beginner and then be able to demonstrate to that panel of raiders, experts, so to speak, that you can work for them and they'd be comfortable having you work as a captain or battalion chief or whatever rank you're going for. So those are just a number of reasons why, but I think if you prepare for the position, that's probably the most important thing to help you out.
Good. What can a firefighter do to best prepare themselves for an upcoming promotional exam, specifically as it relates to the emergency simulation?
Well, one of the biggest challenges is just getting practice. And with fires declining nationwide in most jurisdictions, it's tough to get live practice. So there's a lot of good simulation software programs out there that people can purchase. There are some free simulation software programs that are out there if you do some searches on the internet. But there's a lot of simulation programs that you can actually use and import pictures, put fire, put smoke on there, and actually practice. And a lot of departments have been very successful about taking those to their fire stations and using that to simulate events, using such things as Firehouse Magazine covers. You take a picture of take a look at a Firehouse Magazine cover, and you typically see some big, massive fire. You can use magazine covers. You can take pictures of your jurisdiction. You can even do very low tech of drawing in fires. The key point is, though, is that you got to practice in some capacity if you want to be good and successful. Now, the biggest challenge is just finding the time and not trying to wing it. So I also think it's very critical that you can do a lot of things in advance to prepare yourself. It shouldn't matter what event you have as a chief officer or company officer, whether it's hazmat, wildland, high-rise, but start with having a good standard radio report. You know, have something that's 30 seconds or less of how I report on scene. This is what my radio report's going to be. That's got to be second nature. So a radio report, have that in advance. Think of all the size-up components. There's different acronyms out there for size-up, but think about all those things and have those in place before the event. Be very familiar with paperwork. A lot of departments will have you actually document paperwork with tactical worksheets or ICS Form 201s or just a blank piece of paper, because accountability is a critical component and a critical failure reason. Because if you're thrown a mayday situation and you don't have track of your resources, it's going to be very critical and probably not a good, happy outcome. So those are some ways that you can prepare there. You know, having templates. Think about managing an incident. How do you manage an incident? I break up an incident in four different modules that helps me. You know, think of things pre-incident, number one, number two, en route to arrival, number three, arrival to under control, and number four, under control to post-incident. A lot of candidates, and this is not just a simulation, but also real life, the fire doesn't go out as soon as you arrive there. There's a lot of things that you do before you even get there to the time you even leave the scene. For example, thinking of it in four phases, like pre-incident, what are you doing before the incident even occurs? You're pre-planning, you're establishing expectations, making sure your apparatus and equipment are ready, familiarizing yourself with the area. That stuff you're doing in advance. en route to arrival. I mean, there's a lot of things you're doing in the 5 minutes or 10 minutes you're taking to get to the scene, you know, verifying map pages, checking pre-plans, giving direction to your crew, making sure you're on the correct radio frequencies, correct personal protective equipment, thinking of all the size of potential events, you know, transitioning to when you get on scene. And step three, arrival to under control, you know, giving that initial radio report, doing your 360 hot lap, determining your strategy, your command mode, apparatus placement, tactical objectives, incident benchmarks, assigning personnel. And once the fire goes out, it doesn't end there. We still have a lot of things once we go under control to post-incident, such as determining an overhaul plan with the fire investigator, determining cause and origin, doing maybe a little tailboard debriefing session with the captains, doing documentation, maybe a post-incident analysis. There's a lot of things that maybe if you have a plan in place, what helped me when I was preparing for the captain's test and the battalion chief's test was having a template, not to help me manage the incident, but help me get that right mind frame that I'm think of an incident in four major areas. So when I see it, whatever the incident is, I can be able to discuss that. Because on a static simulation where you see a picture, you have a chance to describe all those things. And on a dynamic simulation where they have radio players and you're doing all different role player mentality, you have a chance to explain your actions usually at the end or justify your actions. So think of something that helps you best manage an incident, whatever it is. Mm-hmm. So those are probably some of the best methods to prepare and try to do the best to get to be prepared to help the nervousness as well, because that...
Yeah. Yeah, well, you're definitely going to be nervous when you're coming into a promotional exam situation, because you don't, you know, you're immediately on the spot. At least when you're out going to a real emergency, you know, from the time the tones drop till you arrive, you have a little bit of time to at least, you know, think about what you're going to do. And a lot of times, you know, they bring you in and flash it up on the screen, and this is what you have, and you're almost like, you know, instantly into the size up and decision making and talking on the radio kind of mode. So it certainly could be unnerving for you. Steve, when the candidate is actually sitting at the, you know, the promotional simulation session, should the candidate talk out loud what they're thinking? Does that help them do better in the process? In other words, should they think aloud so that the evaluators understand that, you know, that they're considering everything?
Well, here's the challenge with that, and that's getting back to preparation. It's really critical that you know what your department's going to throw at you. So it's critical to talk to people that have taken the test before, that put the test together, to find out whether it's a static or a dynamic situation. Because if you have a dynamic situation where you get thrust into the room and you've got a bunch of role players on radios in a separate room that you're going to be giving assignments to very quickly, and they're going to be giving you bombs as well to distract you and throw you off course, you don't really have a chance to really talk out loud, unfortunately. So you're really going in there, you're giving your radio report, you're maybe getting a few things in, but next thing you know, you're getting barraged with assignments, and it's easy to get off track. Next thing you know, 20 minutes are done. You may get some follow-up questions. So you don't really have the chance to talk out loud. It's because your time is used up very quickly. If it's a static simulation, like in my department, we use a static simulation where we give the candidate 5 or 10 minutes to literally talk the fire out, without having any role players to distract you, yes, you definitely have the chance, and that's where I encourage people to talk about your thought process, because it's not really how you do things. There's many right ways to manage an incident. A lot of it comes down to how do you justify your actions. And you usually have some form of follow-up question to say, hey, why did you do this? Well, I did this because of these reasons. And as long as it sounds safe, sound, and appropriate, it's okay. So if it's a static simulation where you can talk the fire out and you don't have any distractors, no role players, without a doubt, 5 or 10 minutes of silence can be deafening. And that's why it's critical to let the panel members know, because if I'm a panel member rating you and I don't get a chance to hear your thought process, you know, don't leave me with a... You don't want to have me assume things, because my assumptions may not be what you think or want them to be.
Well, I was kind of with the question fishing in the direction of what you had described as what they do in the static process, and that is, you know, talking their way through. And I guess the point that I want to make is that doing that, in other words, thinking aloud, is not a natural process. In other words, we don't go around through life, thinking out loud as we do things and decide things. And so it's a lot of times very introspective reflection. And then when we feel like it's time to say something, then we say it. So this whole process of talking out loud requires some practice so that you become good at it. And then I'm going to say one more thing and I'll toss it back to you is, because I've seen candidates do it, talk themselves into circles, go one direction and then they talk themselves right into another direction and into another direction. So what's some advice about how not to have that happen?
And that's the challenge of knowing what type of simulation your department does. I see more and more doing the static one because it is very similar. Every candidate gets to see the same thing. It's a lot easier to set up as well. The challenge is, though, a lot of candidates, it takes them for a loop because it's not normal behavior. And I saw a big decline when we used to do the dynamic simulations. Everyone usually had no problem doing that and handling all the landmines that got thrown at them. But when it came time to talk the fire out and it's deafening silence because you got a couple raiders looking at you and listening to you, it can feel awkward. So you have to almost change gears and be very comfortable talking about those things. So the more of these things you can think of in advance by how am I going to approach this situation, what's going to be my size-up components. Like for a static simulation, before I even gave my radio report, I walked into the room, and the natural tendency is to say, walk in the room and immediately give a radio report and then start doing my business and tracking resources. I actually waited about a minute before I gave the radio report because that's real life. You don't just pull up to an incident and start blurting out things. I use that minute in advance to be able to discuss my size of concerns. Some of the size of concerns I'm thinking of are this, 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 this. These are the things I'm doing en route. These are the things I'm making sure of are happening before the incident happened, while en route. And now I'm going to segue into my radio report. And I'm on scene. I've got a one-story house, fire showing from the front. And from there, I'm now going to direct in my incoming units. Engine 2, you're going to be assigned as fire attack group. You've got my firefighter. Your objective is to locate and confine the fire. But it's awkward when you're doing that banter because you don't have anybody else on the other side saying, copy, engine 2, we're going to be assigned as fire attack, whereas you would in a dynamic simulation. So it takes a lot of almost practice and role-playing with yourself, which is sort of awkward, at least it is for me, to be able to be comfortable doing that. A lot of people can't talk like that. So
yeah.
Knowing what your department is going to expect of you is really challenging. And if it is one of the static simulations, practicing that way, because if the raiders don't hear you, you didn't do it.
Right, right. And I guess that was the point that I was getting at, is it's an unnatural act to think out loud. And you might be thinking all the right things, but if you don't say them, they can't rate you as having done them because you never orated it to the evaluator. Now, what do you think about the idea, Steve, of someone preparing for a promotional exam of in their rehearsing, that they tape record themselves talking out loud and then play it back and say, did I make sense? How did I, and
with
because
that,
without recording it, how do you really know how you sounded?
Well, I think it's great to tape record yourself and videotape yourself for whether it's radio reports, keeping them 30 seconds or less, getting in the habit of assigning objectives. I'm a fan of assigning tactical objectives, for example. Truck 1, you're going to be assigned ventilation group. I gave them an ICS assignment, and your tactical objectives are to provide ventilation, secure utilities. Now, I know there's some people that say, well, you don't need to give them objectives. If you tell them their ventilation group, they know what to do. Well, it usually works most of the time, but I don't want to be most of the time. I want to make sure everything goes according to script. Short and sweet objectives that are 5 words or less, provide ventilation, secure utilities. I just gave them 2 objectives. But I get that down by practicing. Just like Engine 1, you're assigned fire attack, which is a group under ICS. Your objectives are to locate and confine the fire, get an all clear and primary search. I can do that in less than 10 seconds, but it takes practice. So listening to myself in a tape recorder or watching video, I think is critical, because then you can go, wait, I don't sound like that. Nope. Or I got to shorten it up and everything else. So I think that's critical in advance to I don't want to say script yourself, but you almost have to script your lines. So whether you see a 747 into a high rise or a field on fire or a 5-car accident with 5 overturned vehicles, it shouldn't matter. You should have the same scripted radio report. I'm on scene. This is what I've got. This is what I'm doing. This is what I need. And then as for assignments, just being able to cater the assignments depending on the incident. So I think there is a definite plus to be able to practice and rehearse that. But don't sound over-rehearsed, because unfortunately some people sound that way and they sound robotic when it comes to the real thing, and they come across as not having command presence and checking the boxes.
I think, too, though, along that line, even though you might not want to sound rehearsed, I think you would probably want to sound confident. Because I would think some of these people that come into these evaluations, if they sound timid or lacking in the confidence, the evaluators may doubt that they do. They really know what they're saying, or you know. So you got to say it as though maybe you're not guessing, but I think you'd said it earlier. Yeah. Command presence.
Well, especially because you're getting graded on different dimensions or behaviors, as they're called, and the typical dimensions are going to be oral communications, how well you speak, command presence, leadership ability, decision-making, problem-solving ability. These are critical things you're getting graded on. So not having command presence is a critical thing. And as for things being memorized, I'm a fan of call it rehearsed. Because someone told me a number of years ago, and I really like this statement, people fail for two reasons in life usually. They fail because either they're unprepared or they're nervous. Well, nervousness is maybe tough to get over for some people. But think about it. How can you get over the preparation? By practicing and preparing. Well, hopefully the practicing and preparing will help some of those nerves. Maybe not all of them, but that may help some of that. So if you can practice and prepare and rehearse, you're not going to remember everything word for word, but you'll sound, I think, more prepared versus just someone trying to wing it. Well, yeah, I think it's a six-story building. Well, I'm going to do this. I'm going to do this versus I will do this. That's not really good decisive decision-making or command presence. Or I think I'm going to handle it this way. So thinking of all those different types of events, like when I went into my simulations for the battalion chief's test, I almost laughed because I'd already burned down those buildings. Because I know it's typical in most departments that they pick specific target hazards or locations because that's a very realistic event. So when I saw the one building that I had, I chuckled because I've already burned this thing down multiple different times in my sleep driving around the area. So it was already, I didn't do it exactly as I thought, but still, it's not an issue. I was prepared for it. Just like if they showed me another event of another building, one of our hospitals, no problem. I've already burned that thing down. Mm-hmm. So I think there's a lot of things you can prepare in advance to help with those nerves and maybe help you a little better, because if you come across as a little squirrely to the Raiders, put yourself in the role of a battalion chief evaluating a captain. Do you want to supervise that person? Right. Would you feel comfortable going into battle with them?
Yep. Now, a little bit earlier, Steve, you rattled the list off pretty quick, so I want to come back and just visit that list, because I want mm-hmm. the listeners to – I want you to write this down, if you're listening, on a piece of paper, so that when you practice, whether you video it or audio it, when you practice, grade yourself or ask someone else to grade you. And you said, Steve, there are certain things that they're looking for, and it was leadership and command presence and oral skills. And go ahead and go through the list, and maybe even give a little example of what a quality presentation would look or sound like in a promotional simulation.
Yeah, typically the scoring sheet that the rater is going to have is going to rate you on big picture dimensions or behaviors or traits, as they're called. One of them being command presence. Is the person of a commanding presence? And I know it's very hard to imagine that, but we've all probably seen in our department and other departments people that have great command presence and then not so great command presence. And that really ties into also oral communications. Oral communications, you've got to be a good communicator. We know communications is a problem in a lot of issues, not just firefighter line of duty deaths, but also marriage, relationship problems. So being able to exactly communicate what I expect of you, short and sweet and to the point, that's a challenge. Another dimension is leadership ability, and that's very tough to evaluate, but can you be a leader or are you just a crew member? Problem analysis, can you actually analyze the problem that you have in front of you and make appropriate decisions? Just because you see fire coming out of a house doesn't mean that the wet stuff goes in the red stuff. There's a lot of things to take in consideration. Do we evaluate the life safety needs? You know, is this a go or no-go situation? Can someone survive that environment inside? If there's fire coming out of every window, it's a body recovery. If there's fire out of one room and maybe some smoke out of others, we have a chance for rescue. So being able to make proper decisions, you know, where's the first hose line go, second hose line, you know, not necessarily where do we cut the hole for ventilation, that's micromanaging. The ventilation group supervisor, your truck captain, whoever you assign can deal with that. But can you manage the entire event? One of the other common dimensions is just planning. You know, how well can you plan the incident? Are you able to plan things methodically, appropriately, safely, versus just haphazardly shotgun effect? Like some people, okay, well, I think I need to do ventilation, so, okay, once you do ventilation, I got that checked. Okay, I need to get this done, so, okay, we'll do this. Have that plan, that sequence. One of the other dimensions is stress tolerance. This is expected to be stressful because that's the real life. So there's things thrown in there like immediate need challenges sometimes. Just when you think everything is going good, you may get thrown, well, now you have a report of a firefighter that is missing or down or trapped. Or you have reports from the neighboring structure that embers are flying onto the neighboring structure. Now you've got two fires. Or you've got a civilian that needs to be rescued. Well, the biggest challenge is the civilian is on the first floor, the fire's on the third floor. Do they really need to be rescued or can they shelter in place? So can you process that information, be able to assign personnel and companies to take care of those things? And can you basically handle the stress? And a lot of that does tie into command presence as well, too. But unfortunately, a lot of candidates can't handle the stress. That's real life. So those are some of the more common ones, as well as organization. Can you manage your incident? Can you track your resources? So something I mentioned a little bit earlier, command presence. What sounds a little bit more positive or better command presence? Engine 3, why don't you report in on the scene and I would like you to take care of ventilation. I mean, it gets the point across versus engine 3, you're going to be assigned ventilation group. Your objective is to provide ventilation, you know. I said the same thing in shorter words with a little bit more commanding presence, or I would like you to do this, or well, I think I would do this. When you're getting evaluated in a simulation, whether it's a captain or a chief officer position, we expect you to already be thinking like a captain or battalion chief, so don't say, I think I would do this. No, this is what I would do. So a lot of those all are intertwined with each other, but coming in there strong, command presence, not yelling, screaming, or, you know, being too arrogant, which unfortunately some candidates do, but can you manage an incident? And it really, I think, separates the good candidates from the bad candidates. A lot of them just have never prepared, and they think they can wing it, and it really shows.
I'm kind of, I don't know why this comes to mind. just how my mind works, I guess. I'm thinking about auditions for American Idol. Oh. And, you know, somebody comes into their audition, and they're all nervous, and they do terrible, and then the judges, you know, tell them, you know, you're not good. And then they're like, can I do a do-over? And they're like, no, this is it. You know, you had your chance and it wasn't good. So, you know, the candidate who isn't prepared is going to be nervous and they're not going to give their best performance. And the judges, in this case, the evaluators, are not going to be very impressed with that kind of performance when, as you say, Steve, they're coming in, you should be coming in the shoes and in the mindset of the position that you are applying for. And if you got that, I think I might, maybe I could do this, that's not going to give the judges or the evaluators the kind of confidence that you're going to do well on the job. And you're probably not going to do well in the evaluation. Now, with that said, what do you do if you start out on the wrong foot? Can you do a do-over? Or is it, you know, how do you recover from that?
Just like Simon Cowell would say, we usually don't get a second chance to perform there. And that's the challenge, is you've got a set time frame that everyone's got to stick to. Now, in an oral interview, for example, if you start out on a question, answering a question on an oral interview that you don't really like the way you're answering, you can always abruptly stop it and say, you know what, let me start this one over here. I'd like to maybe start this one from scratch. The problem with the simulation, though, is once you start going down the road, it's really tough to switch gears. Now, don't get me wrong. Don't completely derail yourself and just say, I can't change anything at all, because then you're really in trouble at that point. Sometimes, depending on how well you're performing, the raiders may have the ability to throw you a bone, so to speak. I remember in one of my battalion chief, I took the battalion chief's test twice. In the first one, I had my span of control. I was supervising at 9 people at one point, and obviously span of control, we try to do 3 to 7, 5 being optimal. And I think I had like 8 or 9 divisions and groups set up trying to use ICS and almost to the max. And the one raider goes, you seem to have expanded your span of control a little bit too much. What can you do to help maybe reduce that span of control? And he was very nice to be doing that because he could have just said, you know what, this guy is going to get overwhelmed and forget it. Whereas I was able to rethink and recalculate and say, you know what, well, probably the best thing is maybe not as much divisions and groups. I can probably maybe combine a few of these folks here together and reorganize it and, excuse me, do that a little bit more cleanly. But he gave me an out. You don't always have an out. And I wasn't recognizing it either. So the trick is you got to be recognizing these things. And if you find yourself going down a road that may be disastrous, whether it's firefighter going to be in danger very quickly, or maybe you're going offensive when it should be defensive, or the other way around, at least save face by saying, you know what, let me take a time out right now. We need to do this. But that may be tough if you have a dynamic simulation with radio players, because the game is on once you start playing. And they're just hammering you time and time again. So you may have a chance in the questions, the follow-up questions. One of the questions we usually ask candidates after they're done is, what would you do differently? So there's your little chance to segue in. Hopefully you're not taking everything you just did and erasing it, because then it's like, make up your mind, be decisive. But you know what? There's one thing that comes to my mind, and one thing I would have done differently, I think I should have called a third alarm in the situation, or I could have called more resources, or I should have used the incident command system a little better, or I should have had someone assigned just for accountability. In hindsight, I would have done that. Now, you may save some points, you may get full credit, but at least you're not out of the room, because once you leave the room, it's over with. Right. So you may have a chance to save face there by explaining things, or they may say, I didn't understand why you did this. Why did you assign the truck there versus there? That's your chance to justify, well, I assigned it over there because of this, this, this. Okay. And there's no right answer usually, as long as it's safe and reasonable. It's just, can you justify your answers? And that's where a lot of candidates actually don't do well. They do well in the simulation, but when it comes to the question and answers, they forget that we're asking the same questions of everybody. We ask everybody, what would you have done differently? Mm-hmm. But then some candidates go, well, God, they must be thinking I did something wrong. And then they start spilling their guts. Right. Next thing you know, wow, wait.
They talk themselves right out of it.
They talk themselves out of it. So there is a challenge, but the only time you don't have to talk about it is once you've left the room, because that's when the rating actually starts.
Yeah. All right. And this is great, great podcast and great advice. In closing, do you have the short list of advice that you would give to a candidate about how to best prepare themselves for a simulation in a promotional process?
In a short synopsis, a couple things. Obviously, prepare for the position. The best way to do that is get in line with your direct supervisor ASAP. If you're a firefighter engineer, let your captain, for example, or whatever your supervisor's title is, let them know you want to be, you want to get promoted, because they obviously took the test and got promoted, chances are. So get them on your background, on your back, to start helping them out, maybe doing their reports, picking their brain for different things. Maybe they allow you to ride in the seat if that's what your department does. Start networking with other captains in your department. Start networking with people in other departments as well. Attend, you know, conferences like Firehouse Expo, Firehouse World, Firehouse Magazine, internet searches. Start learning about the whole process itself, as well as your own process. Talk to all the captains that have been promoted, because they can give you advice on what to expect in the test, just like the chiefs that have put together the test and our raiders on the test. So you can get a lot of valuable information there, and then just really start getting your mindset of, how am I going to handle different events, whether it's high-rise, commercial, wildland, standard residential structure. Start getting standardized templates for like radio reports, and more importantly, know why you're doing what you're doing, and just practice, practice, practice. You can. It doesn't matter if it's snowing and 20 degrees below outside. You can do a lot of the stuff in the classroom or at home, even with the internet. YouTube videos, do radio reports for YouTube videos. Just an interesting story. I was working with some folks in the Denver area, and she said she had a great radio report down. I go, you've practiced this a few times, right? And she goes, I practiced it probably 600 plus times. Her and another firefighter in the Denver area, when they were getting ready for the captain's test, literally drove each other around the whole city of Denver, and they'd put each other on the spot. They'd stop the car. Okay, do a radio report for the building on the right. drive another block or two. They got so used to different types of situations that it was just second nature for them. Then they'd get even deeper. Okay, where's your first hose line going? Where are you going to park the engine? Where's the truck going? Where's the chief going? And even though there was non-fire conditions, it just became second nature. Now, the only bad part about second nature, the risk you may run, is that you become so focused on that, you miss what you're looking at. So you got to look at the picture. In real life, you're not going to see everything from the windshield. You got to get out and do the 360. So do the best you can with that. Practice in advance. And, you know, as long as you're doing the right things and preparing, you're going to be successful at some point. It may take a while because of promotional opportunities. You may have to go to other departments because of the lack of promotional opportunities, or maybe some of the other factors involved that you have going for you or against you. But opportunities are out there if you want it bad enough.
Yeah. Excellent, excellent, excellent advice. This is, again, the Leader's Toolbox on Firehouse.com. And this is with our guest, Steve Przeborowski, the battalion chief from Santa Clara County Fire Department in Northern California. And Steve also runs a company called Code 3 Fire Training and Education, where he helps people prepare for promotions. And we'll put a link to his website and how to contact Steve at the bottom of the player page. We're at the Firehouse World Expo in San Diego, California. Thank you for joining us, and we'll see you next time.
Thank you, Rich, and thanks to everyone for taking the time to listen.
Thank you, Steve.
Take care and good luck.
If you have a comment on this program, drop us a line at radio@firehouse.com. Thanks for listening. And stay tuned to Firehouse.com for more broadcasts like these. Or visit our website at www.firehouse.com/radio.